Chapter 80. Above decks, on the Mendacium, Langdon gripped the polished teak railing, steadied his wavering legs, and tried to catch his breath. The sea air had grown colder, and the roar of low-flying commercial jets told him they were nearing the Venice airport. "There are some things I have to tell you about Miss Brooks." Beside him at the railing, the provost and Dr. Sinsky remained silent but attentive, giving him a moment to get his bearings. What they had told Langdon downstairs had left him so disoriented and upset that Sinsky had brought him outside for some air. The sea air was bracing, and yet Langdon felt no clearer in his head. All he could do was stare vacantly down at the churning wake of the ship, trying to find a shred of logic to what he had just heard. According to the provost, Sienna Brooks and Bertrand Zobrist had been long-time lovers. They were active together in some kind of underground transhumanist movement. Her full name was Felicity Sienna Brooks, but she also went by the code name FS-2080, which had something to do with her initials and the year of her 100th birthday. None of it makes any sense. "I knew Sienna Brooks through a different source," the provost had told Langdon, "and I trusted her. So when she came to me last year and asked me to meet a wealthy potential client, I agreed. That prospect turned out to be Bertrand Zobrist. He hired me to provide him a safe haven where he could work undetected on his masterpiece. I assumed he was developing a new technology that he didn't want pirated, or maybe he was performing some cutting-edge genetic research that was in conflict with the WHO's ethics regulations. I didn't ask questions. But believe me, I never imagined he was creating a plague." Langdon had only been able to nod vacantly, bewildered. "Zobrist was a Dante fanatic," the provost continued, "and he therefore chose Florence as the city in which he wanted to hide. So my organization set him up with everything he needed, a discreet lab facility with living quarters, various aliases and secure communication avenues, and a personal attaché who oversaw everything from his security to buying food and supplies. Zobrist never used his own credit cards or appeared in public, so he was impossible to track. We even provided him disguises, aliases, and alternate documentation for traveling unnoticed." He paused, which he apparently did when he placed the Soljeblon bag. Sinsky exhaled, making little effort to hide her frustration.
"The WHO has been trying to keep tabs on him since last year, but he seemed to have vanished off the face of the earth."
"Even hiding from Sienna," the provost said. "I'm sorry?" Langdon glanced up, clearing the knot in his throat. "I thought you said they were lovers." "They were, but he cut her off suddenly when he went into hiding. Even though Sienna was the one who sent him to us, my agreement was with Zobrist himself, and part of our deal was that when he disappeared, he would disappear from the whole world, including Sienna. Apparently, after he went into hiding, he sent her a farewell letter revealing that he was very ill, would be dead in a year or so, and didn't want her to see him deteriorate."
"Zobrist abandoned Sienna?"